You're listening to Boston Public Radio. I am Jim Browdy, and she is Marjorie Egan. Every Wednesday on Open Mic at 1 o'clock, we're joined by the new editor of the Boston Globe. He is also the author of Buddy, How a Rooster Made Me a Family Man, a terrific book. He and I texted this morning to confirm his time, and when I followed up with a call, Brian McGorry, why did you answer your own phone? I can't remember. What did you say?
Why do you do this?
Why do you do this? Well, I just wanted to remember. Why did you answer your own phone?
I answered my own phone because I didn't want Jim Browdy giving me a hard time about an assistant answering the phone.
That's an act of honesty,
that's
Brian
the
McGorry.
Correct word.
And you know what he did, Marjorie?
You know what he did?
So we hang up, and we're all done. And, you know, like everybody else who just ends a conversation with Jim Browdy, I'm a little bit relieved. And a minute later, actually about 10 seconds later, the phone rings again. I pick up. It's Jim Browdy saying, just wanted to see if you still answered it yourself.
That's a true story, by the way.
Well, you know, Jim sees himself as an investigative reporter, Brian.
Hard-hitting.
He goes where no man has gone before. You know, speaking of going where no man has gone before, I was struck today. You have a reporter over there in Rome, Brian McGorry. Do you just have one reporter or do you have more?
We have one reporter right now who does the work, Marjorie, of many reporters. Lisa Wangsness is a terrific reporter.
Because I couldn't help thinking it was sort of a sad day for us all in the newspaper business because 8 years ago when we had the last conclave and the Roman Catholic Church was choosing a new pope, we had dozens of, you know, between the Globe, the Herald, the TV stations. Everybody was there. And now it's a whole different world, isn't it?
Yeah, although, you know, I was thinking back to this. 8 years ago, Michael Paulson was our religion reporter here at the Globe. And I know that he was over there, and he was over there for a while, if I remember. I think we just paid off the last visa installment on his dining in Rome.
Yeah.
So he was there for a while. I don't know if we had many more than Michael, or if we had any more than Michael at that point. So
really?
I'm not sure we went down. I mean, maybe he was over there for a longer period of time than we would be now. It's an interesting question. I'd have to find out if we had a photographer over there at that point or if we relied on the wires as we are now.
Yeah. But I read a piece a couple of days ago about a newspaper coverage, not broadcast coverage, of this papal conclave is at least shorter in numbers, which is a perfect segue to an interview that Warren Buffett, the billionaire, gave a couple of days ago, which I'm sure made both you, Brian, and Marjorie gleeful, saying that he was bullish on newspapers. Tell people why he is buying. I just read $344 million he spent buying 28 daily newspapers in the last year and a quarter. Why is he doing that?
Well, it was extraordinary. It was more than an interview. Wasn't this part of his newsletter that he
put out?
Yeah,
it was, actually. You're right.
And he devoted a significant chunk of it. And if you remember, just as a little scenery here, back in 2009 when it felt like the whole world and newspapers especially were falling off a cliff, Buffett came out very publicly just at about the time that the Globe was being shopped around and said that he would never again invest in newspapers. He described newspapers as a, quote, black hole, unquote, for money. And here it is, a little less than 5 years later, or 4 years later, right? And Warren Buffett is buying up a storm. He has a ton of money invested in it. And what he says is, amid all the media clutter, all the talking heads and the shouting, Jim, don't take that personally, but amid all of that, newspapers can deliver local news better than anybody else, and there is always a need for that.
Let me read his words exactly. He says, if you want to know what's going on in your town, whether the news is about the mayor or taxes or high school football, there is no substitute for a local newspaper that's doing its job.
And he goes, and he adds the point in that it doesn't matter if it's in print or if it's on a website. And you know, either way, it's a valuable service that people are willing to pay for. His big deal is what you know. A lot of us have made a big deal about for a long time. We can't give this stuff away for free. We made the understandable mistake many, many years ago of giving our very expensive journalism away for free on our websites back in the mid-90s. People got accustomed to not having to pay for our work. And now the key is whether you're reading us in print or you're reading us on one of our sites, that you have to pay for what it is we do here. And that's what Buffett's primary thrust is.
We're talking to Brian McGorry, editor of the Boston Globe. Well, you have changed something, correct me if I'm wrong, about paywalls, haven't you, or you're planning to? What are you doing in that regard, Brian?
Well, I mean, our big change, Marjorie, was a year and a half ago when we built BostonGlobe.com in addition to Boston.com, and slowly and steadily and now more abruptly in the coming month, we're providing the free site, which is Boston.com, with fewer Globe stories, so less Globe journalism on Boston.com. We're basically going to be providing most of our stories in shorter form on Boston.com, which is an advertiser-based site. You get it for free if you're a reader. And if you decide you want to read our more in-depth journalism deeper into the stories, then you have to go and pay on BostonGlobe.com.
Yeah.
You mentioned a minute ago, Brian, that in 2009, when the Globe was being shopped around, Warren Buffett was bearish, I guess, on newspapers. Now, obviously, fast forward 4 years. Speaking of fast forward, where are things in the current shopping around? What can you share with us?
Absolutely nothing.
Meaning you can't share anything? Oh, but that doesn't mean that absolutely nothing is happening.
No, I mean, every time I even start to speak about something like this, like the phone lights up from our PR department basically telling me to just shut the hell up. Here's what I would say to that is my sense is just from hearing stuff going on around town, picking things up. So an awful lot of interest in the Globe. You know, this isn't 09. This isn't a fire sale. This isn't the New York Times desperately trying to get rid of us because we're hemorrhaging money. The Globe is a very stable enterprise right now. We are cash positive, to use a business phrase. And I think that there are a lot of people out there who hopefully are very civic-minded, who appreciate what it is we do at the Globe, the importance that we have to Boston, who are interested in owning a big enterprise like this.
You know, Brian, I'm sorry. You know,
and I'm picking that up. I mean, I'm hearing that. I don't know what you're hearing, but that's what I'm hearing.
You know, one of the things I'm hearing, I just thought of this 2 seconds ago. In our former incarnation, when you joined us every Wednesday as well, we talked a lot about, I think it was your 8-part brilliant series on Liberty Mutual, right?
Oh, yes.
What was your reaction to the Globe story?
Hold on.
What?
Don't move on so quickly. When Brian documented about their heated tarmacs for the airplanes and their $5 million redos of their offices at Liberty Mutual while the premiums for the customers going up and up. Give us a few like meaty details there, Brian.
Let me just – I have it all on one sheet of paper here.
Yeah. I mean, it was great stuff.
Yeah, she's right. For those who missed it, what were the highlights of that thing?
Well, the highlights were – I mean, do you really want this?
Yes,
yeah,
I do.
It was
really
great.
The heated tarmac. I love that part.
Well,
I already said that, though.
First and foremost, it was a $50 million a year pay package for the CEO four consecutive years. There was the fact that it was a mutually owned insurance company, which means it's owned by the people who have policies that never paid a dividend to any policyholders and actually had a pretty high it used to hike its rates quite substantially relative to other companies. There were the five luxury long-range private jets that the company ran out of its huge hangar up at Henscombe Air Base with, as you point out, Marjorie, the heated tarmacs.
And where were they going? Where were they going all the time, Brian?
There was
coincidentally.
The fact that these planes spent what seems logically to be an inordinate amount of flight time flying to resort destinations, especially where company officials have vacation
just
homes.
A coincidence.
Hey, so was it good news? That, you know, I was about to ask.
You didn't let me finish.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Go ahead, Brian.
Can't get enough. There was a $4.5 million renovation of the 1,335 square foot office for the incoming CEO.
How many square feet was that again, Brian? Please.
1,335.
Thank you very much.
In itself isn't that big an office, which is what makes the $4.5 million renovation seem all the more outrageous.
But didn't he have marble imported from some obscure town in Italy or something like that?
Carved stone for the private shower.
Exactly.
Okay, enough
already. Design ceiling.
Okay, fine. Now, Brian, so what...
Jim's sensitive now. Since he's gone over to this big new gig, I haven't seen his office, so I'm wondering what it might be like.
Actually, it's got windows on three walls.
No carved stone,
Hey, but Brian, so when I read the story in the Globe the other day about the salaries disclosure of the new head of Liberty Mutual, which I think was below $10 million, I guess that's progress, is it not?
It was like, what was it, 9.9 million?
I think it was 9.9, 9.8, something like that, yeah.
Something like somewhere between a 29 and a 39% pay increase. The new CEO over there is David Long, who if you met him, you would really like him. Very, very nice guy. I still think $10 million is an outrageous amount of money for a head of a mutual insurance company to make. But he's a very, very nice guy. Liberty Mutual is a well-run company, but that is a ton of money.
Hey, Ted Kelly, the $50 million man, was a nice guy too, wasn't he?
I don't know Ted Kelly. He's widely respected in town for his business acumen.
Okay, well, that's an abrupt answer to the question. Okay, Brian, your predecessor is now editor of the Washington Post, and I was reading the other day that Marty Baron, again, the former editor of the Globe.
Great editor.
Just ended 40-plus years of an independent ombudsman down there, and he's replacing it with an on-staff reader representative. When I read the story, the Globe has neither. The last ombudsman, was it Chris Chinlin or Mark Jerkowitz? Who was the last ombudsman?
I think it was Chinlin, wasn't it?
And she's the new managing editor, and she's terrific.
She appointed yesterday. One of the best things I could have ever done here.
No, great choice. So is that on your – I mean, as a reader, I have to say, I love this whole concept of ombudsmen, even though I'm sure it gives hives to editors like you. Is that something you're contemplating?
Well, I mean, as much as I would like to take our incredibly scarce resources here and devote them to somebody who would criticize me full time, I don't know if that's the right thing to do right now. Now, look, in all seriousness, an ombudsman is a very important job. They serve a critical purpose. It would be not critical because we don't have one, so I can't say critical. But they serve a real purpose. The fact is, would I rather hire somebody to be a watchdog of the Globe now when we have all these other people in town who do it, including in your building where you are right now?
Yeah.
And you know, at the Phoenix, and you know, there are bloggers who do very, very well at this. I don't know if that's the right way to spend our money right now, rather than cover you know, agencies and businesses that we should be covering.
Yeah.
I think there's enough people out there now who do a very good job of watching us that I'm not sure, in an age of really diminished resources, we have to spend that money ourselves.
Brian,
does that make sense, Marjorie?
Really, I think you can just read the commenters on the stories, and you'll know how you're doing when you go
if we read those. If we read the commenters on the stories, we would shut down tomorrow, for God's sakes. I mean, my God. Do you do that? Do you read yours?
As I said, it would be an exercise of masochism. They all hate me.
I don't even read the stories anymore in either paper. I just read the comments.
That is perfect.
Hey, Brian McGrory, editor of the Boston Globe, we really appreciate your time. We'll talk to you next Wednesday at 1 o'clock.
Thank you, Jim. Thank you, Marjorie.
Thank you, Brian. And thank you for all eternity for bringing us a story about the heated tarmacs for the Liberty Mutual executives.
By the way, people should Google it. In all seriousness, an eight-part series.
Especially if you were a Liberty Mutual customer to see where your
policyholder,
money...
Policyholder, yeah. It was brilliant.
Exactly what's going. Okay, he is, of course, Brian McGrory from the Boston Globe. Tune in tomorrow for Open Mic at 1 o'clock with Christopher Lydon. Can't wait for that. Earlier, we talked about the huge advancements in facial plastic surgery. But you know something? There's a lot of innovations that isn't about human beings. Up next, we're going to talk to Angel Memorial vet Dr. Nick Trout about new advances in vet surgery and take your calls on vexing questions like, you know, do you pay for Junior's first year in college or do you get Miss Buffy, your 12-year-old Maltese, multiple MRIs? That's next on Boston Public Radio, 89.7 WGBH.